Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and this is our last weekly Horticulture Day of 2021. Never fear, though. We will be here just about every other week through the winter months and return to weekly shows in March. That's one sign, and the weather is another, that it is time to finish prepping your yard and garden for winter. Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, will be here in a few minutes to answer your questions, but we're going to start the hour with some advice about overwintering fruits. And Gail Nonicke, Iowa State University Professor of Horticulture and Global Resource Systems, is here to help us out. Hello, Gail.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And before we talk about our strawberries and our raspberries and the things that we do tend to grow in Iowa, let's start with a fruit that is always in the spotlight this time of year, but is not one that we particularly grow in Iowa. Tell me a little bit about the cranberry.
So the cranberries are really something that we associate with this time of the year, and it's one of the truly native fruits of North America. So North American indigenous people have consumed cranberries. They're very nutritious. They're high in vitamin C. They have antioxidants. It's a really interesting plant in that it is an evergreen plant and it's very low growing, but it grows in what we will call acidic bogs. So this is where the soil pH would be quite low, at about 4.0 to 5.0. And it's from these bogs then that some of the early growers in the early 1800s started control the water flow in and out of those bogs. And so that's where our modern cranberry systems come from.
So it's not something, it sounds like, we can grow in Iowa.
No, it isn't. Although we enjoy the fruits, it would be pretty difficult to be able to have that soil pH that low, maintain it, at the same time have sufficient water that we could cover those plants in the winter for winter protection or in the spring for spring frost, let alone harvesting them, because the cranberries do float on the water for harvest.
All right. Well, let's move on to talking about fruit that we can grow here. And of course, a lot of us grow strawberries, and that's a perennial crop that we have in our gardens. Tell me just a little bit first, before about we talk about how to protect them, about how strawberries grow.
Strawberries grow very well in Iowa, and typically they would be grown in a row as an herbaceous perennial. And because they are this herbaceous perennial, we like to overwinter them. Flower buds form in the fall. They overwinter, and then we have everything that Iowa gardeners love, those first fruits in the garden in the spring and June when the fruits are ripe. So we do need to protect those plants for the winter.
All right, and it's not just as simple as just protecting them. We have to wait until they're ready to be protected. So tell me what we're looking for.
So we actually wait until the plants have acclimated. Yet, it's kind of a tricky situation because we don't want the temperatures to be too low before we add a mulch. And the way that we protect them is with a mulching material such as weed-free oats or soybean straw or wheat straw. We can use chopped corn stalks in Iowa. That's another possibility. And we would apply this mulch about 3 to 5 inches deep. And then after settling, it will be 2 to 4 inches thick. But the issue comes when we're trying to think about at what time do we apply this. And so we need to have it before the temperatures are always below plus 20 Fahrenheit, because that will damage the flower buds. So again, that in Iowa, in some falls might be in early to mid-November in northern Iowa. This year we've had a more moderate fall, but I think home gardeners, if they want to go out this Thanksgiving break and put their mulch on the strawberries, it would be an ideal time.
And what would happen if you mulched them too early?
If you mulch them too early, you might have they might not acclimate, they might not harden off sufficiently, or you might actually have some moisture captured in there that they actually, won't you know, they'll start to rot at the base. So that might be what gardeners would see.
All right. And then how do we know when to uncover them in the spring?
So in the spring, we would typically uncover them. We could go out and we could look and see if they're about three or five, not more than three leaves. Typically, that would be yellow. They call that being etiolated because the sun didn't, get into that area underneath that straw mulch. And in Iowa, that would usually be about mid-April for home gardeners. And what we're trying to avoid is having the plants grow too early in the spring, that then those flowers that give us the fruit would be susceptible to spring frost.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about raspberries, which, of course, something else that we love to grow in Iowa. And there are different varieties that we grow throughout the state. Tell me a little bit about hardiness factor between red raspberries and black raspberries.
So the red raspberries are the most hardy, and purple raspberries are also hardy. They're a hybrid between the red and the black raspberries. Black raspberries are not as hardy, the commercial cultivars, and they can be reliably grown in central Iowa and southern Iowa. But in northern Iowa, there might be damage to the canes over winter or in late winter, early spring, and then you would lose the fruit crop. So we do recommend red raspberries all over Iowa. We recommend purple raspberries if you select the cultivars correctly, and then black certainly in central and southern Iowa.
All right. And there are wild raspberries that grow in Iowa that are black raspberries, but those aren't the cultivars that you're talking about, right?
Right. They're from the same genus and species, but they are wild. And often you'll see those reliably hardy across the state. But the commercial cultivars that gardeners might buy would have limited hardiness. There's an older cultivar that was actually developed at Iowa State many years ago called Black Hawk, and that one is quite hardy.
All right, let's talk about what you should do with your raspberries in the late fall.
So the raspberries in the late fall, really you don't have to do anything. You can just allow them to overwinter. But some gardeners like to remove the canes of primocane fruiting cultivars. So a gardener would need to really understand which type they had, because raspberries are an interesting plant in that we have cultivars that actually flower and fruit on the current season's green shoots. And then we have those that flower and fruit only on the second year growth. They're called biennial fruiting raspberries. So these that grow on the current season's growth, the primocane fruiting raspberries, you can actually cut those off at the end of the fall. It helps with some of the garden activities that you wouldn't have to do in the next spring. Or you can just allow them to overwinter and then cut them off in the spring. So again, probably the only thing that's needed in raspberries in the late fall would be pruning on the primocane fruiting types if you wanted to.
All right, and we don't need to worry about mulching with raspberries?
Not really. Typically, you know, the red raspberries and the black raspberries, their crowns would be hardy enough.
All right, and we know we can't really protect our fruit trees with mulch like we might strawberries, but fruit trees do need some protection in the winter. What are some of the risks?
Well, the primary risk is where the, it's a really tasty treat for animals. So the first one that gardeners will see with regard to all their fruit trees will be possibly rabbits that are eating at the base of the plant. They'll eat the bark and into the trees. So that heavy browsing can really cause damage to the tree and actually cut into the layers so that tree would be destroyed. So we do like to protect, especially young trees, or if you know you have a high rabbit population, by putting hardware cloth around the tree trunk. And this is not chicken wire. The bunnies can certainly get through that, but this is a hardware cloth that has smaller openings, and you just make a cylinder and you put that around the trunk of the tree. Rabbits and other animals really are happy to stand on the snow and eat up higher, so you do need to think about having that hardware cloth where it would be at least 10 to 12 inches above the snow line. And then we also, if it kind of wiggle that that hardware cloth into the soil to a depth of about 2 inches so that they can't dig underneath that.
All right, don't underestimate the bunnies is what I hear you saying, Gail.
That's right. And deer will browse, but there's really not too much you can do about that. They'll eat the upper portions, and certainly excluding deer is the best way. But yeah, these are you know, great treats for our wildlife over the winter months as well.
Now, fruit trees that are relatively young might be a little bit more vulnerable to the harshness of winter. Is there anything else that we should be thinking about with those relatively newly planted trees?
Any of the newly planted trees, and this would be true for the berry crops as well, should be watered deeply before the soil freezes and winter really starts. This is especially true in years where we've had dry weather, and that's the case this year in many areas of the state. So we would recommend a very deep watering before winter, so that those plants are you know, in a good soil moisture situation before the soil freezes.
This time of year, I think that there's a little bit of confusion about when the soil freezes, because if it's freezing outside and I don't want to go out there, that doesn't necessarily mean that the soil is frozen. So how do we know how long to water?
So I would do it maybe just kind of based on gallons, you know, and it depends certainly on the rooting depth of the plant. But for young plants, you know, you would want to be able to water down at least in the top foot of soil.
All right. And usually you can do that through November?
Yes. Yes, especially this year, you should be able to do that through November.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about any of the plants or trees in your life. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Gail Nonicke, Iowa State University Professor of Horticulture and Global Resource Systems, and Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. We'll also be here in just a moment. That number again, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Gail Nonicke is here, Iowa State University Professor of Horticulture and Global Resource Systems. And Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, is also here. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show. And let's jump right into questions. Olivia is on the line in Dubuque. Hello, Olivia.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We're looking into buying a potted evergreen tree to put on our front porch. Our house on the front faces west. We're on a north-south street and get lots of wind from the north and the south. What do I need to do to protect it during the Christmas season, and then afterwards we will probably put it in our backyard under a deck to keep it from freezing, then plant it in the spring.
All right, Aaron?
Well, so container grown plants like this evergreen will need some protection for their root zone to make it all the way through the winter. Typically, at least for the holiday season, it will probably be okay on your porch, but you'll want to do some pre-planning, because to allow this plant to best overwinter, you'll want to set it in the ground and protect that. You can set it in the ground, pot and all, to protect that root system. And so what that means is that you have to dig the hole now, because once we get into the end of December, when you're done using it as decoration on your porch, the ground will be frozen. You won't be able to get a shovel in to dig the hole. So you'll want to prepare that site now so that once you're done using it as decoration, you can shuttle it or move it over into this hole, maybe hopefully surround it with some mulch or some other material that isn't frozen, to allow it to overwinter that way. Your other option is if you have a structure that stays, like an unheated garage or a three-season porch, that stays kind of in the 20 degree to 45 degrees temperature range for the winter, you can overwinter it in that location too. But you will need to protect that root ball, especially when the cold temperatures of January and February arrive. And so setting it in the ground is the most reliable way to do that. You'll have to do some preparing to do that. The other thing to keep in mind is that if the root ball is dry, you'll want to water it. So especially if temperatures are above freezing during the day, it may need a little bit of water, and just, you know, a gallon jug from the house, and watering it that way is just fine.
Okay, we're going to have a big old cottonwood tree cut down. He's going to do it around the first part of December. So I'm not sure I'll have a space, but I can just temporarily dig a hole and put it in there temporarily with the pot and all.
Yes.
Keep it in the pot. Is that what you're saying?
Yep, that's the most reliable way to protect that root system in that container over the winter months.
Okay, and then when I figure out where it's going to go after the cottonwood tree is gone, then replant it. And I take it out of the pot, and is it probably need to tease the roots and all that kind of stuff on it?
Yep. In the spring, once you have its permanent location, you can plant it in the ground just like you would any other tree, shrub, or perennial. Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Olivia. And Aaron, as long as we're talking about potted evergreens this time of year, I know a lot of people love the idea of buying an evergreen tree to use as a Christmas tree that they can then plant. If you want to bring something like that into the house, it has to be for a pretty brief period of time, right?
Yeah, that's the trick with this. It's a very, it's kind of a romantic idea, right?
For sure,
to bring in this tree and enjoy it. But what happens when we bring a potted evergreen into the home is that we pull it out of dormancy. And then if we want to put it back outside, it's not prepared to go out into January weather. And so if you wish to do this, you're going to have to celebrate Christmas utilizing the very old-fashioned idea of having a tree in your house for maybe a week. And then putting it back outside. And all the things I just mentioned, having the hole ready so that you can protect that root ball, maybe having a pile of mulch somewhere that isn't frozen so that you can fill in around it to help keep that plant well protected over the root system of that plant, well protected over those January and February cold nights, is going to be really important. So it's certainly possible to do. It's not very easy, quite honestly.
Well, and actually, my parents have been doing this for many years, and they've got it down to they bring it in late afternoon Christmas Eve, and they take it out by noon on Christmas Day. So it is not in the house very long. You have to really commit to this idea, I think.
And that's what makes that work. Otherwise, a cut tree is a great option.
You can give us a call with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here is a perennial question for you, Aaron, from Diane in Riverside. Is it now safe to prune an oak tree?
So typically we recommend December, January, and February for this. It's been kind of warm this fall. I'd probably wait just a little bit longer. I want this tree to be fully dormant, and I want all those little insects that potentially transmit that oak wilt disease, which is why we avoid pruning at certain times of year for oak trees in particular. I want to make sure they're not around. So if you can wait a few more weeks, December, January, February would be a better time.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Bob is on the line in Carlisle. Hi, Bob.
Yes, hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, I have a question about fertilizing a big leaf rhododendron. What's a good time of the year to do this type of thing? Is it too late to do it now?
So this wouldn't be a great time of year to put fertilizer on any of our outdoor garden plants.
Okay. So
the best time would be just as it's breaking bud in the spring.
Okay, so do it maybe about in maybe late March or April?
Yeah, first part of April is probably going to be about that time. Of course, it depends each year where we're at, but just as it's starting to leaf out, break bud, that's a great time for fertilizing something like this.
Okay, thank you for your help.
All right, thanks a lot for the call, Bob. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's another flower question. This one's from Nancy in Marshalltown. In three of my purple coneflowers this year, I saw what I think was yellow or aster yellows. I've removed those plants. Are there any coneflower varieties resistant to aster yellows, or is there something I can plant that would fill the same niche? Perennial, full sun, pollinator, 2 to 3 feet tall.
Yeah, there isn't a lot. There aren't any cultivars that I know of that are going to be resistant to this disease. And roguing them out as soon as you see them is the best way to avoid it from spreading and potentially causing more issues. Coneflower is a great perennial, typically. Easy to grow, native, great pollinator supporter. Some other perennials that you could look at that fill that same kind of spot in your garden. I would look at garden phlox. I would look at blanket flower, which is a little shorter, but would like similar conditions and would also maybe help pollinators out a little bit. Maybe daylily, although they are maybe not quite as attractive to pollinators as coneflower is, but that could also be an option that would love that same location.
All right. And for people who aren't familiar with aster yellows, can you give us a thumbnail sketch?
Yeah, it's a virus that causes misshapened flower heads, which is what most people notice about the disease. What it really is problematic is it really weakens the plant. And so you have a lot less vigor and less growth and can cause some dieback. And that's where it's super problematic is that it weakens the plant and you don't get good growth as a result. It's transmitted primarily by insects that are feeding on the plant. And so as soon as you see it, you want to rogue it out. There are no viricides like fungicides, you know, it's a different kind of organism. So we can't control it in the same way that we would control other diseases like powdery mildew or something like that. And so when we have it, the only really good way to control it is to get it out of our gardens by destroying the plants that exhibit those symptoms. And then being very diligent about watching for it to make sure that it doesn't pop back up again where it could potentially spread to other plants.
So it's a real bummer.
It is a bummer. Yeah, it is.
It.
It's not uncommon, but it's not the most rampant thing out there either. So we certainly see it on a regular basis, but it's not something that we see kind of running through the fields, if you will, as a disease issue. So you got to keep an eye out for it, but it's not something that we come across on a regular basis.
All right. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Erin Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Gail Nonicke is also here, Iowa State University Professor of Horticulture and Global Resource Systems. You can ask your questions, 866-780-9100. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Gail, Liv is on the line in Ames with questions for you. Hello, Liv.
Hi, yes. I had a quick question for Dr. Nonicke. So when they were talking about winterizing the strawberry plants, it kind of sounded like it was for ground plantings. And I was just curious as to whether or not there was a difference in the way that you winterize your strawberries in ground plantings versus maybe raised bed setups in like a backyard?
Yeah, great question. Gail?
Sure. So the raised beds also have to be protected with 3 to 5 inches of mulch over the top. And so that can create a problem because the mulch might blow off, you know, with our wonderful winds in Iowa, where the mulch might blow off of that raised bed. So if that's the situation with a raised bed and a smaller planting, you could put some chicken wire or something over the top that would, you know, put plastic fencing over it that would really hold that in place. And then put some bricks or other things on top of that wire or plastic fencing. But they do need to be protected just like the ones that are on the flat soil surface.
All right. Does that answer your question, Liv?
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Pat is on the line in Kyoto. Hi, Pat.
Hey, we started collecting rainwater for our vegetable gardens this last growing season, and we got one of those big 350-gallon IBC tote tanks, and the inside's building up really bad algae throughout the season. Is that something that I need to concern myself with for the garden? Do I treat it or just let it go, or what's the story there?
Aaron?
Well, I think, you know, it probably isn't going to cause a lot of issue for the garden, but it is something that I would want to have under control. This is a good time of year to go through and clean that out. You'll probably want to winterize the rain barrel anyway to help protect it from, you know, cracking or freezing, and to protect the hose and the spigot and some of those other pieces that could get a lot of damage if they were allowed to freeze with water inside. So this would be a good time to kind of get in there and scrub it out and kind of get rid of some of that algae. You know, practically speaking, it's not going to cause a lot of challenges for the garden, but in terms of appearance, in terms of smell, in terms of attracting other potential insect pests to the rain barrel water, it can be a little problematic. The algae can be composted in your compost pile. So when you clean it out, you can remove most of it by hand, and then use a weak bleach solution to clean the surface of the container as best you can. One part bleach to 9 parts water is probably the best to get in there and kind of get it cleaned out.
All right.
Is there anything I can do during the season as far as adding small amounts of bleach that won't hurt the garden, or should I just let it safer with the algae, essentially?
Yeah. The easiest thing to do would be to exclude light from the barrel. So if it's, you know, if it's semi-transparent, that's probably part of the reason why the algae is growing. And so if you can paint the outside of the barrel, if you can construct something around the barrel to exclude light, you'll have a lot less algae. That's the most kind of organic solution to that. There are algicides and some other things you could add to the water that are readily available, especially from pond supply stores or from websites that specialize in pond gardening. That would be another approach that you could take. A little bit of bleach probably won't hurt anything, but that would be my last option when I'm really desperate. I wouldn't really want to do that. One of the benefits of collecting rainwater is that it is, you know, it is chemical free for the most part. So excluding light will probably be your best bet for controlling it into the future.
All right, Pat, thanks a lot for the call. And we're going back to the strawberry bed here with Marcia in Kelowna. Hello, Marcia.
Yes. How you doing today?
Good. What's your question?
I really appreciate the information here. I'm new at strawberries. Just had them in a year or two. We finally got some this summer. And I've mulched them with some straw. But when I was checking out the soil, I found some white stuff in the soil, like an inch, two, three down. And I don't know what it is. At first, I thought somebody splattered paint in my strawberries. But what could it be?
So if it's just looks like it could be a white mold, that might be that was kind of residual as the straw decayed. So if you are still having good growth and the potential for productivity, that typically wouldn't cause problems for strawberries. And actually, that will degrade over time in the soil. If you were really concerned about it and it's only in the top inch, and you had the time and the interest, you could kind of stir up that soil. But otherwise, I would expect it might be just from that mulch decaying. Erin, have you ever heard of that? Anything else?
Yeah, that's I kind of lean towards that too. It's probably just more eye-catching because of the time of year, but is likely just part of the natural decay process of some of the mulches that are in the soil.
And Marcia, you had something to add?
I'll go with that. Yeah. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much for your call and your question. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer more questions. It is Horticulture Day today from Talk of Iowa. And with me, Erin Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Gail Nonicki, Iowa State University Professor of Horticulture and Global Resource Systems. You can join the conversation. The number is 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Erin Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Gail Nonicki, Iowa State University Professor of Horticulture and Global Resource Systems. They are here to answer your questions. The number to call, 866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Suzanne is on the line next in Anamosa. Hello, Suzanne.
Hello there. My question is regarding a bush that I would like to plant, but I'd like your advice on what type of bush. So I have an area where our backyard meets with our neighbor. Right now there's just a low wire fence there, and I'd like to put a bush in that would give us some privacy. Flowering would be nice, but if they're difficult to grow or maintain, then, I'm happy with something else. My inclination was maybe a burning bush or a rhododendron, but I'm not sold on that. And so it's about a 10-foot area across, and then it would probably be about 6 or 7 feet deep, and low maintenance bush.
All right, Erin, what do you think Suzanne should plant?
Is it full sun, or do you have some shade?
Yes. Thank you. I forgot to say that.
It is full sun, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
So the first thing that comes to mind for me are some of the viburnums, especially arrowwood viburnum, a very twiggy shrub that can provide privacy both in the winter months, even without foliage, but definitely in the summer months, has flowers in the spring. It has really beautiful berries that the birds really love in late summer. And then has really nice fall color. So arrowwood viburnum could be a good option for that area. Red twig dogwood would be a nice option. Some of the panicle hydrangeas can be nice, thick shrubs that could work well for that area too. Lilac is a pretty standard option, but could be makes a nice hedge and can provide some privacy as well. It definitely doesn't have to be evergreen, but if you don't have a lot of deer pressure, something like yew could be a nice hedge as well that provides some privacy. I would shy away from burning bush, especially near a woodland edge. We have seen a lot of burning bush is not native. It's from Asia, and it does quite well in the understory of many of our woodlands and can displace a lot of native plants. And we've been seeing this plant seed itself into woodland areas more and more. And so it's becoming less and less of a recommended plant because of that. And especially if it's next to a wooded area, I would probably shy away from that particular plant in this setting.
All right, Suzanne, thank you so much for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number. And let's talk apples with Josh and Adele. Hello, Josh.
Hello, yes. So I purchased some property in May and inherited some young apple trees. I believe they're Fuji and Honeycrisp. I think they're no taller than I am, 6 foot tall. And I was having some issues this last summer with pretty bad powdery mildew and I think rust. This is all new to me. And I used some fungicide that I, you know, got at a local store there. But I'm just wondering it got pretty bad, so I'm just wondering what I can do. Is there something I can do now? And then, you know, what I can do in the spring to kind of control that?
Yeah,
sure. So right now there really isn't that much to do. Certainly some of the apple diseases overwinter on leaves. So if there are only a few trees and you don't have a lot of them, you could have the option of going out and either making sure those apple leaves were mowed up, or even better, if you could bag them and take them off the property. That would be one possibility, depending on which diseases you had. The other thing that will be really important is in the spring when you do the dormant pruning is actually to start to create a training system that will allow that canopy to be opened up, and so that you have excellent light interception and air movement through that canopy. And then finally, it would be actually to kind of start to use, if you're interested in using some fungicides and things, actually to start to use those at the correct timings when the inoculum is present and some of those things. So probably in the spring would be the best time to start to mitigate that, other than trying to get some of that inoculum off of the base of the trees, like by removing the leaves.
Right, yeah. So, and they've all still got their leaves on them right now.
Okay.
I mean, would it be beneficial to like, you know, trim some of the powdery mildew off the tips and just get rid of as much as possible?
Right. So at this time of the year, we wouldn't do that. And I think it probably would be better to just not prune off the tips of apple shoots, except if it is fire blight. Then that is a bacterial disease, and it looks like a shepherd's crook, so you would know if you had that. And then you would go back 12 inches below where that strike is, where you see the damage. But again, with regard to like our normal fungi that are on apple trees, it typically wouldn't be where we would actually prune that off. We would instead control that by opening up that light canopy and then also some targeted fungicides in the spring. But again, fire blight, you have to remove that from that plant because that's a bacteria. So that would be with actually cutting back the shoot tips.
Right, right. Is there a fungicide you recommend?
No, they're very specific. So I probably would talk with your county extension office. They might be able to provide some recommendations for your climate zone. The other thing is that there are some extension bulletins that provide the general care of the different diseases that are prevalent in fruit crops. Aaron, do you have any other recommendations from the extension programs?
Yeah, the kind of the specific fungicides that can be used. Sometimes you can get them in a home orchard spray, but some of those publications that are available both online and from the Extension office kind of walk through. The timing is so very important, and it starts earlier than most homeowners realize if you want to get into fungicide use. The other thing I'll add is that Fuji and Honeycrisp are notoriously bad with disease issues. They're wonderful tasting apples, but they, if you want a nice, high-quality apple, it is very difficult to do without fungicides, unfortunately.
All right. Well, Josh, thank you so much for the call. And let's go back to the phones now. John is on the line in Solon. Hi, John.
Good morning, Charity. Thank you. Follow-up to the earlier question about pruning oak trees. I've got a number of very mature pin oaks, and they have low-hanging branches, maybe 2 to 3 inches in diameter, that are obviously dead and have been dead for a number of years. It doesn't seem like the logical place for an insect to attack a tree. Can I remove those?
Yeah, so pin oak is, its natural growth habit is to have its lower branches kind of swoop down and its upper branches kind of arc up. And so in some situations, this can be really frustrating because they get in the way. You can prune those branches. You'll want to get that done before mid-March. But while the tree is dormant is an okay time to do it. I like to do this work in the dead of winter, but you can do it anytime, basically from kind of, I don't know, late November, first part of December through the middle of March is ideal.
All right, John, thanks for the call. And we've got another oak question here from Dennis in Durant. Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
From a phone. Yeah, I wanted to, I've got pin oaks, older, 26, 27 years old. I prune them every year in mid-January. I know better than I know to do that at time. But I've noticed in the last 12, 15 years, I've seen this white smear along the trunk from about where the lowest branch is, which is now, you know, 12, 15 feet up. I've trimmed them. I mean, I prune them every 3 or 4 years. And it's almost, best way to describe it, you can have an inch and a half piece of chalk and lay it on its side like you do when you're a kid in grade school and just rub it on the trunk from the lowest branch area, 15 feet from the ground, and bring it kind of in a swirl almost with the trunk to the ground. That's what it looks like. It looks like somebody smeared chalk there. And then it accompanies some perfectly round holes that are about 2/8 of an inch in diameter and about, maybe 1/8 of an inch, maybe 1/4 deep, like you took a pool cue stick and it was strong enough to punch a hole perfectly in the side. And that's usually right around that white smear. My question is, you know, my pin oaks seem to be pretty healthy. It doesn't seem like that's hurt them any. And my question is, should I mess with that, look into it, or am I just, okay, just ignore it?
So the hole that you're seeing, are they kind of randomly dispersed throughout the tree, or do they tend to be in little rows?
Oh, they're not necessarily right in the middle of this white smear, but they're near it. It's not around the tree a lot, no.
Okay. So I suspect that this may be some sap flow, either from a pruning cut or from a crack in the bark or some other kind of damage. Sometimes that sap will attract some secondary lichens or fungus that aren't really a problem for the tree, especially a mature, healthy tree. But if you are concerned about it, it's certainly something that would be worth submitting a couple photos to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic on campus here at Iowa State, or contacting your county extension office, and they can help you kind of work through that to kind of see what it might be. Because based on the description, my best thought is that it is just simply some sap that has dried on the surface of the tree. It becomes more pronounced at certain times of the year because there's some things growing on the sap, but otherwise it's not a problem for the tree. The little holes, especially if those little holes are lined up in little rows, are probably sap suckers or kind of like little woodpecker-like birds. Again, they're not going to be a problem for a healthy, mature tree. It's just they're in there looking for certain little insects that are naturally occurring and aren't problems for the tree. So I don't know for certain what this might be based on the description. So it might be worth taking a few photos of it, both close up and a little bit further away, and submitting them to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic to see if they can help.
All right. But Dennis, you definitely get extra points for being incredibly observant. So
yes.
And very good at describing a problem. All right. Let's try to get a couple quick questions in here. One for you, Gail, from Michelle in Iowa City. When is it best to plant aronia plants, and do they need any special winter care?
Aronia plants, it's the best time is in the spring, and they don't need any special care at all.
Great. And Aaron from Brittany in Waterloo, is it too late in the year to plant garlic and or Brussels sprouts?
It probably is too late to get a crop of Brussels sprouts in this late in the season. They certainly can live this late in the year, but you would want them established earlier in your garden. Garlic, you could get them in the ground. As long as you can dig a hole, you can still plant it. It would be better to do it earlier in the season, but if you have it sitting there, it's definitely fine to do it now.
All right. Mark and Marion is thinking about installing 4-inch deep edgers to keep raspberries from sending runners into his lawn. Would the 4-inch depth be sufficient to halt the runner spread, Gail?
No, it won't. It will.
How
it will
deep
help,
must he go?
It would probably have to be 12 inches, but that's all right because 4 inches will help. And then the ones that would be so deep, it would take much longer till he actually saw them in his lawn.
All right. So you're going to slow them down? You just can't stop
right.
them with
slow
that?
Slow them down. That's right. Yeah, the raspberries will send these underground stems, these rhizomes, off for about, you know, down like 12 inches. But most are in the top 4, so that would be a slowdown.
All right. From Fran in Urbandale, I planted a Polestar climbing rose late this summer, but I know nothing about roses. It has 2 canes that have grown about 6 feet tall. How do I protect it so it will survive the winter? Aaron?
So that rose, I'm not as familiar with that climbing rose specifically. Most climbing roses will see some winter damage in Iowa. And so protecting it as best you can by putting leaves or straw around the base of the plant can help with that. But there'll likely be some winter dieback. You'll wait till spring when the foliage just starts to flush out. You can prune it back to that point. Climbing roses are an interesting plant because they are not truly climbing. They're more rambling. They just have such long canes that they need support and can kind of ramble or sprawl over an arbor or other structure. And so these cultivars often see dieback of some of those stems, but as long as it doesn't die back all the way to the ground, the plant should be fine from year to year in Iowa.
All right. And Amy has a question I'm going to ask for her. She said this was her first time growing roses in a container. Should she put them in the ground? Does she still have time? How does she get them through the winter?
Yes. Yes. You will want to protect that root ball through the winter months. So setting it in the ground, whether you plant it or you just set the container down into the ground, either is fine. And now is the time of year to do that.
All right. We are out of time. Aaron Stile, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. Gail Nonicki, thank you.
Thank you. It was fun.
Gail Nonicke, Iowa State University Professor of Horticulture and Global Resource Systems. And happy Thanksgiving to both of you. We will be back with Horticulture Day on December 10th, and then we'll be about every other week through the winter months. We'll be back to weekly shows in March when things start to warm up a little bit. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.